For now, we are going to switch our focus and talk gardening. And this is your opportunity to phone in and tap into the mind of a horticulturist, because Charisse Viljoen from Kirstenbosch is back with us. We're going to be talking a bit about trees today, seeing as September is Arbor Month. And we will also open the line for your calls after that. So if you have a question, dial us now on 021-446-0567 or leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Charisse, you're WhatsApping me in the background to say you've actually eaten at Polesmoor yourself. Before we talk trees, welcome, as always. Tell us what it was like.
It was delicious, and it was through my grandmother who used to play bowls on the excellent bowling green that they had. And then at Pool Frankie, we would go across. I'd meet her after her game, would go across to the restaurant, and she wouldn't let me order anything other than the calamari steak. It was delicious. The best calamari steak I have ever eaten. I haven't met its match since. I'm not sure if it's still on the menu, but I dream of it.
How long ago was that, Charisse?
It was about 14 years ago.
Okay, so fantastic. Okay, well, thank you very much for adding to the list of people remembering it back then. And I'm hoping by the end of the show we'll find somebody who's been more recently, and we'll ask them if the calamari steak is still on the menu, Charisse. Thank you. Good to know. It's one of my favorite dishes, and it's not that often that you find it on the menu. So thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
Okay. Charisse, before we talk about trees and flowers, since we last spoke, Kirstenbosch has opened again to the public. And I thought we'd start by just reflecting on how well supported you've been. Are people coming back in large numbers? And what's looking good at the moment?
Oh, the garden is still full of weeds. We are really working hard to catch up. We're still on a skeleton staff personally, and we have some of our garden guides and botanical society volunteers helping us tackle the problem. But other than the weeds, the garden is in full flower, and it's still that bird song that I mentioned before. Yeah. It is bursting with bird song. We don't have any annuals because we weren't able to plant any because lockdown prevented us from doing that. We have a few that have come up on their own, but lots of proteas and ericas and fennels and daisies in flower, and the mountain is beautiful with its presence. We haven't been flooded with visitors. We've had a lovely trickle, a stream of visitors working their way back. And I think it helps now that we're allowed to have picnics and gatherings, small gatherings. It really helps. When that was prevented, a lot of people were like, oh, but now that's okay to do that.
That's an important reminder, and I'm so glad you mentioned it. Okay, so the doors are open. The daisies are out. I mean, the daisies are out all over. Charisse, the feedback from the West Coast is that the floral displays this year are among the best they've been in years.
It's the rain. The rain has brought both the bulbs and the annuals out in massive displays. It's stunning.
Okay, thanks for the tip about what's happening at Kirstenbosch, and reminder to everybody that they are ready and waiting to receive you back again. We are going to take your calls. Before we do that, though, you might have noticed a flurry of tree planting going on in Cape Town in the last week or so, and that is because September is Arbor Month, and the tree of the year this year is the Cape Ash. And I know the plan was to plant several hundred of them around Cape Town in areas that were in need of greening. Charisse, the Cape Ash, it's a beautiful tree. It's got those lovely glossy green leaves with a pink edging. Is it an easy one to grow?
It really is, and such a forgiving tree, which I always, you know, they win me over when they tolerate different kinds of soils and more or less water and wind or no wind. It really is a champion tree. Obviously, as with most plants, if you have better soil, less wind and more water, they are very lush and green, but they are still beautiful if you treat them, you know, more unkindly, poorer soil, much less water once they're established in some wind. And as you say, because of those glossy green leaves and fruit that attracts birds, not very messy, has a lovely rounded shape. It's an excellent tree for Arbor Month.
Is it a tree that gets particularly big? How high do they grow, Charisse?
They're roughly, it always depends, you know, in the forest. So when we write on Plants Africa, we usually give natural habitat information, and it says 15 meters. But the trees in gardens and cultivation, when the tree is not competing for light from the forest floor up, it's closer to 8 or 10 meters.
Okay.
Slow growing, though.
Slow growing. How long would it take to reach maturity?
About 20 years.
Okay, so this is an investment for the long-term gardener then, okay. But it's Ekebergia capensis, the Cape Ash, which is the tree of the year for Arbor Month this year. And Cherise, I mean, any other tips on trees that are very forgiving, easy to grow in the Western Cape climate?
Yes, our assegai, the Cutisia dentata, does really well. It doesn't always form a nice shade canopy like Ekebergia does. And Cononia capensis, the red elder, does very well. And then we have a local pincushion that is a tree. It's Leucospermum conocarpodendron. Really tough champion. It grows all over our peninsula mountains. It's adapted to summer drought, and it's a tree protea or a tree pincushion, and that's a lovely one to try find. And then something that the two things that are lovely as well are Olea europaea, the wild olive, makes a lovely canopy, and the Podocarpus latifolius, the real yellowwood. All of these are local to the Cape and are adapted to our local conditions. The yellowwood probably have always been found in ravines and cliffs where there was more water, mm-hmm. but if you can provide that with some protection from the wind, they make beautiful trees. And then, of course, the milkwood. Our coastal milkwoods are lovely trees. So all of those.
Okay, thanks so much for the tips, Cherise. So lots for you to work with there, and glad to see that our first two callers have got questions about trees. But before we leave the Cape Ash behind, Cherise, somebody's asking on the WhatsApp whether they will grow in a pot.
Yes, very well. I have one in a pot in my own garden.
Okay, that's an easy enough answer. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's move to the lines, and we're going to start with Simon, who wants to ask about one of the trees you just mentioned, a yellowwood. Simon in Brackenfell, good afternoon.
Afternoon. This is very nice that it's Arbor Week and all that. Mm-hmm. But I've planted a yellowwood tree in 97 in my garden.
Yep.
And it's 23 years now, and now it's huge. It's about 10 meters at least. And I put a bird bath under it, so it's got a water. All the time birds bath there. So what happened is the fruit drop, then I get little seedlings grow. So now I've got about 150 in black bags, those nursery bags. But I put them in milk containers first, those square milk things. I cut some things off when I dig them out. I'm very careful with the tap root.
Yeah.
And I plant them. But the problem is, some of them, about 20% of them die. For no apparent, I don't know why, they just go all. I suppose I've got to be happy with that, or is there something I can do to stop them from, some of them dying?
Any suggestions for Simon, Cherise?
Simon, quite often, although you've tried not to damage, there is some damage as you transplant, as with most plants. So as a horticulturist working in a production nursery, I can tell you that a 20% loss is all right. 5% would be better, but you will always have a little bit of loss on things like trees, if any of their roots and infection will get into any of the broken surfaces. And for the other 15%, watch the watering. Overwatering is really a problem, or they were weak to begin with. There is this natural selection that comes along, and the ones that weren't meant to make it don't for some reason. They're either more susceptible to the stresses of too much or too little water, or to pathogens in the soil. So I'm quite impressed with your 80%. Not too bad.
Okay, Cherise, thank you so much, and good luck to you, Simon. Let's go to Thelma in Epping. What would the gardening slot be without a question about a lemon tree? Thelma, good afternoon.
Hi, afternoon, Papa. I thought about that too when I had a lemon tree question. I actually got a lemon tree for my birthday in December, and then never got to plant it out with all in good intentions. I never got that far. And then lockdown happened in March, and then it's still in its bag. But it had these little lemons on it in wintertime. When winter started, they were about the size of a small radish. Oh. And I thought, okay, apparently they do well in pots, and I thought it should be fine in the bag. I'll leave it. Anyway, they just never got any bigger. They just kind of stayed that size and never grew and just shriveled up. So I think obviously I need to plant it out, but I just couldn't understand why it would do that. Would it have been too little water, or because it was in the bag, or any other reason?
Selma, you kind of bonsai'd it by not planting it on, and so you were rewarded bonsai-sized lemons. And they stayed small because the roots couldn't expand. And you're quite right. You could possibly have pushed it to finish growing the fruit, but it would have used all the nutrients that it could have to form those fruit from what was available in the bag of soil. Unless you added fertilizer and added nutrients, it had no more to grow its fruit with in any droughting. That possibly no bags dry out quickly if you just don't keep your eye on them. Just a couple of drought sessions would have caused them to either drop them or to just abort them and let them shrivel like they did. So, yes, just plant it out. It's really good that it's already forming fruit. And the minute you give it more space and some Epsom salts and some magnesium and some fertilizer and regular watering, it'll fruit again for you.
So it's not permanently bonsai'd?
No, just while it's restricted. It's the same with my Ekebergia. It stayed smaller because the pot size has reduced or limited its roots, and there's a root-to-shoot balance. So only what the roots can provide will the tree grow in relation with shoots and branches. You give more root space, you get more shoots and branches. Restrict the one, it reduces it. It's amazing. It's you know, nature's always in balance.
Thelma, interesting question, and let us know how it goes once you have got around to planting it out, whether it springs into size and shape and height and larger fruit, and send us a photo if you have the time. All right, our next question is a voice note that actually came in last time Cherise was with us, and it was one that needed a little bit of research to make sure we gave a correct answer. So we're going to listen to it now, and then Cherise is going to tell us what she found out. Let's take a listen.
Hi Pippa and guest, I have a lovely piece of lawn that I think it's a mole rat is busy destroying utterly, and I would like to move it somewhere else in a humane fashion. Do you have any tips and advice before I lose all of the lawn that I've carefully nurtured over the last 5 years of drought? Thank you.
Cherise, what did you find out?
Well, I'm always concerned when people say mole rats. You know, is it the mole rat? The mole rat is the one that goes a lot deeper and pushes out the mole heaps of soil. And the golden mole is the runner mole, mm-hmm. and it actually makes the little tunnels on the surface. The mole rat is a vegetarian, and it's eating the bulbs, and it's eating the grass and roots and shoots, and you name it, it's nibbling away at the vegetation. Whereas the golden mole is actually insectivorous. It helps you if you've got a lot of grubs. Mm-hmm. So not knowing which one, planting plants is the best advice. And the plants that mole rats and moles don't like is anything, because they're blindish, they can't see very well, their senses with sight and with hearing are enhanced. The marigold, daffodils, or any allium, any onion family plant, planted around the edge of the lawn would help a lot. And also anything with a castor oil product. There's a product called Molgo that has a very bitter castor oil in it, and it will deter them hopefully long enough to find another spot. It doesn't. Nothing is permanent. And even if you use the sound vibrating sticks, they eventually get used to it and they come back. The best thing that I have found is to put steel wire or mesh, or even chicken wire, although that does eventually break down, about 5 centimeters below your lawn. So if he's desperate, I would actually dig it up. Wow. Dig up the sod, lay the mesh, not too deep, otherwise they just climb on top of it, and then plant your lawn back on it. And I know it works because I did it for my dogs that were digging my lawn up. And it definitely prevents both the moles from coming up and the dogs from going down. Otherwise, there's very little that you can do that is humane. Anyone who comes to catches them, usually disposes of them. They're very territorial, and there's a glut of mole rats. They're not protected, they're pests. Whereas the golden mole is highly protected, the one that makes little runners, that is insectivorous. So also, you know, when you talk about getting someone to come and take them away from you and come catch them for you, it's very difficult to catch them, and the traps often hurt them. And you need to be sure you've got the right one.
And you don't know what that person who caught them is doing with them afterwards when they remove them from your property either. So it is one to be researched very carefully. Charisse, thank you so much for those advices on those pieces of advice on some natural interventions. Very interesting one about the mesh underneath the lawn. I've never heard that before, but it makes perfectly practical sense. So thanks for tipping us off about that.
Absolutely, Papa. Yeah. And you know, the grass doesn't mind it. It grows right through it, any kind of lawn. If it is the runner mole, I just wanted to add, and they're after the insects, if you can keep your lawn a little drier than usual, not enough to lose it, but to make it unpleasant for the earthworms and the grubs that are the mole's food, the runner mole's food, that also helps just to dry it out.
Okay. Thank you very much for the advice, and I hope that's useful to the person who left that voice note for us. Good luck to you. Right, we've got loads of tree questions coming in, which is great. While we're talking lemon trees, let's go to Matt in Paul, who says, my lemon tree has been planted in the ground for 1.5 years and has flowered but never produced any sign of fruit. What can I do to promote fruit growth?
Definitely need to fertilize more and water consistently. You can get blossom drop after pollination when the bees have done their job, simply because there was a gap in the watering. Lemon trees are very thirsty. If you think how juicy a lemon is, and people often leave them during the drought period because, you know, we don't have rain in summer. And that is when you really need to become good about watering your lemon tree in particular.
Okay. Barbara on the SMS line has a yellowwood tree much in need of pruning. She says it's a small townhouse garden. I didn't plant it there, but she's been told pruning is illegal, and she says, please help. Is that correct, Charisse?
If the tree is in her own garden, it's not at all illegal, no. And sometimes pruning to shape in an urban environment is kinder to both the garden and the garden user. So I have no knowledge of pruning a tree in your own garden, even if it is the indigenous yellowwood, that it is illegal, not to my knowledge. Maybe a listener can help me out, but I'm going to say no, it isn't.
Okay, so go for it, Barbara, and shape to your heart's content. Okay, let's go back to the lines. Zubeda in Wynberg, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Hi, Papa. And Charisse, this is a question for you. You know, about 15 years ago, when I planted 2 Erythrina lysistemon trees outside my house and the house next door, my brother's house. Across the road on both sides, that's west and south, on the other corners, we've got 2 beautiful erythrinas that bloom, and they look beautiful today even. But mine will bear just maybe 1 inflorescence for the entire spring season and summer. Now, what is actually wrong with that? Well, I never feed it. It's actually on council property. It's on the pavement. It's boxed.
So, Beta, that's so disappointing, and always the worst when a tree down the road does better than something you were hoping to create yourself. It's just so annoying. They are
years and years and years for that tree. I love the erythrinas. I mean, they're so pretty and orange and bright. And then next to that, I've got 1 aloe. I think it's called an aloe dichotoma or veinsii, I'm not sure. And, you know, some kids near here, they rip the one as the the branches grew, they ripped the one side off. Now, that one doesn't bear any flowers whatsoever. No flowers.
And usually, the reason something won't bear flowers is that it's getting too much water. In the case of an erythrina, I know sometimes you wonder, the listeners wonder why I'm contradicting myself, but in this case, you would actually want them to get a fright. Flowering is something that they do to perpetuate themselves when they're worried that they themselves are not going to survive the next season. So no extra water, no extra food. But the thing about erythrinas is, although they seem so similar at a close glance, there are quite a few different forms depending where the original tree came from. Because you just take big truncheon cuttings, big sections of branch, and plant it. And it, depending on the mother plant, it would either have been a good flower or less floriferous. I'm really tying my tongue with that. So it's either the watering and the feeding, which is keeping it in growth and not in flower, opposite to the lemon tree, or it's that the one that you have did not originally come from one that flowered very well or comes from a form that flowers less. Very disappointing spot. The only thing to do is to pull them out, plant new ones, which I know you're not going to do.
Sorry, Isabella. But Charisse, thank you for the forthright response. We must wrap up, but let's wrap up with this interesting message from Anne, who says, we had a mole problem. We put stinky fish guts down the hole and they left us alone for over 5 years. My worry is, I wonder how long it was before it was pleasant for you to be in the garden if there were stinky fish guts down the hole. Have you ever heard of that one, Charisse?
I haven't, but I love it immediately. The minerals and the calcium and everything in the fish would be so good for the garden soil. I wouldn't want to sit on his lawn after he planted fish under the mesh, under the soil, but it would definitely work. Fantastic advice.
And thanks for sharing it. Charisse, thank you. You're always such a wealth of advice for our listeners, and we love having you on the show. We'll chat again in a month.
Thanks, Pippa. Bye, listeners.
Charisse Viljoen, senior horticulturist at Kirstenbosch, and please go and give them a visit now that they are back open. You may be able to pack up a couple of weeds on their behalf while you're visiting, but enjoy everything else that's in full bloom.